Good evening. Welcome back to Ulcerative Colitis Motherhood and Me. I'm Ulcerative Colitis Mama, and I'm joining you from a very cluttered spare bedroom on a very chilly Saturday evening. So just FYI, there are a few background noises going on, so I hope they are drowned out by my headphones and my microphone. So first of all, my heating is on. I also have about 1,000 air fresheners that kind of go off whenever they feel like it. And I also have a child and a dog that may or may not join us. So I will try and pause and edit my content if that happens. As we know, my editing skills leave a lot to be desired. So that's just for your information, just a heads up for the background noise. So before I go into any content into the episode itself this evening, I am aware a lot of the content I have I've created, shall we say, over the last few episodes has largely consisted about me starting my new job, which, yeah, it has been a bit of a life-changing sort of experience for me, and it still continues to be in so many respects. But I feel that I just feel like I'm regurgitating the same information for the last couple of episodes, and I feel like it's unfair to you guys, and I just feel like I'm kind of getting bored of talking about it myself. So I'm going to kind of shelve that for a while and just, you know, obviously if there's any major updates with my job, obviously I will share them with you. But I just felt that a lot of it's been, oh, well, I start my new job and this is this and that's that, you know, and I just feel like that's been done already. So before I go into any other content, I am very, very aware that although my podcast is called Ulcerative Colitis Motherhood and Me, a lot of the content I create primarily sort of evolves around mental health and well-being. I'm a massive advocate for mental health. It's probably been out of the three kind of components, if you like, of my social media platforms, the mental health side has been probably the most kind of overall kind of overwhelming aspect, which has kind of manifested from having colitis and becoming a mum, and it's all sort of cyclical, to be honest. So I don't often discuss a lot about the colitis side of things, and I don't often discuss the motherhood side of things, but they're kind of all intertwingle, that's not even a word, intertwine. and hence my podcast and associated social media platforms. So that being said, it is in the UK between the 1st and the 7th of December. I'm pretty sure it's just in the UK. I'm not entirely sure. I do apologise if I do get my facts wrong with this one, but it is Inflammatory Bowel Disease Awareness Week. So I tend to use this opportunity on my private sort of social media to kind of raise awareness of the condition and sort of share my story. Obviously we know that on my Ulcerative Colitis Motherhood and Me platforms, we know that. So I didn't feel like that was something I needed to kind of sort of repeat, really. But for those of you who are new to listening, welcome. And for those of you who continue to listen, welcome back. It's always a pleasure to have you guys here. So just as an overall, I'll give you a bit of a whistle-stop tour, shall we say, of my social media platforms, which will encompass the ulcerative colitis element. So I will do that in this episode. I will also bring up sort of elements of the motherhood and mental health side. So as always, listener discretion is advised. I do talk a lot about trauma, a lot about birth trauma, postnatal depression, maternal mental health. I talk a lot about mental health in itself, a lot of the struggles I've had with anxiety, elements of OCD, intrusive thinking. So as always, I always put trigger warnings in place just to make sure that I'm safeguarding you guys, that I appreciate everybody's in a different, you know, particularly if you're in recovery, everybody's in a different part of their journey. So for me, and I say this in every single episode that I create, that the whole ethos of me setting up these associated media, so whether it's my podcast, my blog, which is a little bit dormant at the moment, my Instagram, my Facebook, also a little bit dormant at the moment. I do, you know, my aim was to share my story, to hopefully reach out to other people, to ensure that they're not alone, to ensure that I've come through it. And hopefully if it, out of millions and millions of people, if it helps one person, then that's, you know, that's great for me. That's what I aim for. So, but I do appreciate that some of the content I do discuss can be triggering for other people. So I always put trigger warnings in place. So I realise I've waffled on already. This has been a particularly long introduction this evening. So without further ado, let's get started with tonight's episode. Okay, so for those of you who are new, welcome. This is a safe space. For those of you who have been here before, welcome back. Always a pleasure to have listeners, whether you've listened once or listened more than once. I really do appreciate it. So diving straight in then to my journey of how I got here with ulcerative colitis, motherhood and me. So in honour of, and just bear with me, I stand corrected, it's Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week. And from my very quick internet research, it appears as though it's the 1st to the 7th of December every year. And it is, I believe, UK-wide. So if I am wrong, I do apologise. And yes, I need to educate myself a bit more. But so that being said, I'm more than happy to share my journey. So it's going to be a very much of a whistle-stop tour because there is a lot. So before I go talking about inflammatory bowel disease, just please be aware that I do talk about change of bowel habits, including, you know, some detail in that area. So, you know, I don't want to put anybody off. I don't want any, you know, anybody being disgusted. But unfortunately, inflammatory bowel disease is as glamorous as it says. So just to give you guys a heads up, okay? So it all began, basically, my first symptoms started about 3 or 4 days after my son, little G, was born. He was my first child and will be my only child. That's a story for another day. So yes, I started having symptoms and basically I thought I probably got a bit of an upset stomach. And I thought nothing of it and the symptoms went away. And it was basically I had like a bit of diarrhea that kind of caught me off guard while I was still in hospital with him. But nothing happened after that, so it was fine. I just put it off to, it was probably just due to childbirth. It's probably just, you know, the hospital food. so I paid it no mind, really. So then probably about 6 weeks after little G was born, I started having really bad symptoms that increased in intensity and frequency. And that being sort of the most primary of those symptoms was blood in my stool, which was quite scary. It wasn't too bad at first, so I kind of put it off as hemorrhoids because that's quite a common thing for women sort of pre and postnatal, so I didn't think anything of it, you know, and I kind of played it down a little bit. This kind of started to increase in intensity, so basically it got to the stage where every time I drank something, even if I just sipped it, every time I ate anything, I would be running to the toilet within about 10-15 minutes. And it was almost like the peristalsis of me swallowing or eating anything or drinking anything triggered my bowel to flare. So I would be, you know, at you know, sometimes I was breastfeeding my son at the time, I'd have to sort of kind of take him off me to run to the toilet, which was quite distressing for both me and him. I had accidents on occasion as well where I didn't quite get to the toilet on time, and that was, you know, albeit humiliating as well as, you know, not great. I was on average going to the toilet about 50 times a day. I wouldn't leave the house. Sort of as it got worse, I wouldn't leave the house at all. I would, and if I was brave enough, I'd venture to my friend's house or to my mum and dad's, because that's where I felt safe, because I knew there were toilets there and I felt that I wasn't in a, you know, position where I was going to be judged. So I got quite scared. I started feeling very tired. Obviously, I was very tired because I had a newborn baby anyway. And if you look at any of my pictures on my Instagram in particular, you'll see the picture of me when I was at my worst. And I do look very, very bad, to say the least. So I became very anemic. I sunk in, my hair started falling out. I dropped a hell of a lot of weight. So I was around when I was in, because apparently they weigh you when you go in, when you're in labor into the hospital. So I was about 11 stone six when I was full term, and I dropped down to, well, obviously we'll exclude the fact I probably lost weight after giving birth, but I did drop down to 9 stone 13. Because I wasn't able to digest any food. And at the worst stages, it was frank blood, clots and undigested food. So that kind of rang many, many alarm bells. So I went and spoke to my GP. My GP asked, obviously, for samples, for bloods. I had to have a rectal exam from another GP a couple of days later, because it felt that a female GP would be more appropriate. She did sort of examine me, and she felt that there was elements of colitis there, or certainly inflammation of no, you know, of no known origin. So then I got referred to gastroenterology, and to be fair to the system, I was seen within 2 weeks, and I ended up having an emergency sigmoidoscopy at my local hospital, and I was subsequently diagnosed with extensive ulcerative colitis. So extensive being, they estimate from what they could discover, the nurse consultant was only able to go so far, but she estimated that 3/4 of my large bowel were affected. She said it was extremely friable, and just even gentle touches with the fiber optic camera were causing the lining of my bowel to bleed. So I was started on a very strict course of treatment, and touch wood and praying to the universe or whoever's out there, I felt much better within a week of starting my treatment. So I went on steroid treatments. I started on a drug called mesalazine, which is an anti-inflammatory specific to the bowel, which I've been on ever since. And it's my lifeline. That's basically the beginning of my journey with ulcerative colitis. So it was a bit of a shock to kind of, you know, after being a relatively healthy 29-year-old to then being diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And to this day, the specialist, my GP and myself still don't know how I came about it, how I was diagnosed and what triggered it. So whether it was birth trauma, whether it was some sort of infection I picked up in the hospital, or any number of things, but I was then sort of dealing with this new disease. So thankfully, with the exception of having a relatively minor flare up in the beginning of 2021, touch wood, I've been okay following that. So with a diagnosis such as an autoimmune disease of any description, it was pretty frightening. Of course, the run up to actually achieving a diagnosis, and that fear of the unknown and thinking all sorts of sinister thoughts because of it was quite debilitating in that respect, emotionally as well as physically. So on the back of that, of course, then I developed postnatal depression, severe anxiety. I was already a pretty anxious person prior to this, and then all of a sudden, you know, you add an autoimmune disease and a newborn baby into the equation, and you know, it's kind of set it completely off the scale. So following that, I did end up with quite a multifaceted mental health problem, which I was treated professionally, as well as some private counselling and a lot of talking therapy, a lot of treatment in that respect. And thankfully, and very, very gratefully, I was discharged from mental health services in the beginning of 2019. So what I would say, I'm in a much, much better place now. And that's where ulcerative colitis, motherhood and me began. Basically, once I'd got into remission the first time round, I was able to, it started off like journalizing my journey, because I felt like there was so much I wanted to share, but I felt that, you know, talking to my friends and family, people I knew, it was different because I didn't know anybody with inflammatory bowel disease of any ilk prior to this. And a friend reached out, actually, and I knew she had some health problems, but I didn't realize that she had ulcerative colitis herself. And she actually has a form of it called pancolitis, which means it's affecting her entire bowel. And she's on much more advanced treatment than I am. So, you know, that big love goes out to her. She got me through a very, very, very difficult time and adjusting to this new health issue that I then had that I will have to live with for the rest of my life. So, Laura, thank you, if you're listening. So yeah, it was a heck of an adjustment, to say the least. So I felt that, you know, journalizing my thoughts and feelings, and kind of putting it out there to the universe, really, and just seeing if anybody else out there felt the way I felt and experienced the same experiences or similar experiences. And I was quite overwhelmed by the response, really, from either people I knew or from complete strangers. And it was, you know, I felt a little bit less alone in my journey then. And I had some, you know, very, you know, and I still do have incredible support from friends and family. So, and, you know, without them, I probably wouldn't be in this stage of my recovery. So thank you to everybody. You know who you are. So for those of you who are new to, that's the, basically the very edited version of my journey. So, and from that, going into remission, I became physically better in terms of, you know, feeling healthier and being in a more safest place, you know, physiologically. However, it left a lot of emotional scars from that and a lot of emotional wounds, which needed a lot longer to heal, to recover from. And that's why I talk a lot about the mental health and emotional side of things, and, you know, how I felt very robbed of the early days of motherhood, the early weeks of motherhood, even the early months of motherhood, because I couldn't go out and do the things other new mums could do. And I felt very, you know, and they say comparison is the thief of joy, and certainly colitis was the thief of my joy at the time, because it overshadowed so many magical moments, you know, the first sort of 3-4 months of my son's life. So, and that those are, you know, I'm very accepting that those are times that I'm never going to get back, but I accept that now, and I move forward, and we move forward. So that's where we're at. So now, keeping on the same kind of pattern of mental health, for those of you who know me or know my content will know, I'm an incredibly anxious person. I do have quite a low self-confidence at times. I'm an overthinker. I'm a very empathetic person as well. So it's quite a multifaceted, complex little person that I am. I do manage my anxiety really, really well because I'm aware of it. And in some of my other content, I describe it as the kind of like the annoying housemate that I have, or the awkward, the awkward housemate that I have, because I've learned to live with the anxiety, because I know it's part of the quirkiness that makes me. And I have sort of the rational side of me, which often has the quieter voice, whereas my irrational side tends to have shout a bit louder. And, you know, I've got used to that, and I've got used to listening more to my rational self and trying to step back, look at the situation as a whole and just deal with it that way. And that's just how I deal with my own emotional needs, and particularly my anxious thoughts. And for the, you know, and that works generally. I find my anxiety is heightened when I'm in an area of stress or new change. And that's probably why I've discussed a lot about my new job in my most recent content. And to be honest, I haven't actually felt that anxious since. I still miss my old colleagues. I told you I wasn't supposed to talk about my new job in this, but I will stop in a minute. But I keep moving forward, and I've been fine. I've been actually fine. I've been great. I've been plowing on. I feel a lot more confident starting this role than I did starting my old role. But that was a different time in my life, particularly where I was. So I've been good. To be fair. However, I was off work. I had some annual leave, so I, you know, obviously I had like 10 days off work. And in that 10 days, I had what I could only call like anxious episodes. They weren't anxiety attacks. They were just little things that I blew up out of proportion. I'm just panicked about. For an example, and it's things that important things that scare me, grown-up things, adulting scares me a little bit. Now I'll come to that in a minute. So my first example was I'd been to one of my workout classes, which I love, and it's like a mixed martial arts type aerobics type HIIT class. Now, I know that doesn't sound like anything that I'd normally be into, but I'm really into it. Anyway, a couple of days after that, I got calf strain in my right leg. And I thought nothing of it because, you know, I'm in my mid-30s now. It takes me a bit longer to recover. I'm not the fittest person, and I'm working on that as well. And I had this pain in my right calf. Now, rational me would go, okay, it's fine. Bit of calf strain. Just, you know, take it easy, but keep walking on it and gentle exercises, blah, blah, blah. Irrational brain came to the party. And irrational brain then decided, you've probably got a DVT. Now, I've got no indications that would point towards DVT straight away, but it was almost like I'd gone from, let's just go straight for the worst case scenario. Let's go straight there. You've got a blood clot in your leg. So then I was sat there watching TV with my son, and it was the weekend, and I'm there palpating my calf. So squeezing it and comparing it to my other one. And then I at one point I thought, oh, that calf seems a bit more firmer than that one. And it probably is because I've probably got a weakness in my leg, which means I've got one leg stronger than the other. And, you know, rational brain's kicking in now. Nurse brain's kicking in. Irrational brain was like, oh, that's not good. So then I run upstairs. I take my trousers off. I'm not even lying. This really, really happened. I sat on my bed with my legs outstretched. And for about 20 minutes, I examined both my legs comparatively. And I checked, right, how big's that one? Does that tense up? I was trying all sorts of things. I was checking my pulses. I was doing all the things I would have checked on a patient when I worked on surgical nursing. So, yeah, I got a little bit carried away, shall we say. And I started really panicking about it. And I thought, well, no, there's no change in temperature. There is no localized redness. There's no... So I'm there rationalizing it. Nurse brain's trying to interrupt irrational brain, saying, whoa, hang on a minute. There's no particular, you know, there's no red flags here. So why have you jumped to that conclusion already? But it really took me a while to calm down. To the point, I almost rang the non-emergency out of our GP number because I just needed somebody to tell me, calm down, you have not got a DVT. You are okay. I just needed somebody to tell me that, just to reassure me. And the day before, I'd actually walked a good probably 4 miles because we'd gone to a Christmas market and we'd caught the train there and we'd walked. It was a city. We walked quite far and I wore stupid shoes, meaning like non-supporting Chelsea boots. Again, probably a contributing factor to having calf strain, plus the fact I'd been to an exercise class. So rational brain has got all this checked out. Irrational brain has got those papers that irrational brain has sorted out and just thrown them, cascaded them into the air. So Big G, my husband, was on a mountain day. So basically it is what it is. He goes up the mountains, you know, walking, hiking. And I said, I think I've got a DVT. Now, I feel really stupid. I can laugh about it now. But at that time, I was very much absorbed in that. And I was convinced I'd completely gaslit myself to thinking I had a DVT. And he was like, well, how have you come up with that conclusion? And as I messaged him back, rational brain started, the mist started to clear a little bit then. And I kind of brought myself off down from the ceiling and thought, yeah, he's got a point. So, and I think what had happened was I'd had this discussion with a colleague of mine a few days before because he'd got a spontaneous DVT. Now, bear in mind, my colleague is 27 years older than me and an ex-smoker and, you know, completely different lifestyle, different health completely. So I think I'd almost planted the seed like subconsciously and then all of a sudden, boom, calf pain, must have a DVT. And a couple of days later, I was fine. My calf pain disappeared because it was just calf strain. So that was one of the examples. Another one was, so on my week off, it was a particularly busy week off, I might add, because I had something to do every day. I had like kind of like a task to do every day. And one of these tasks was we had to arrange an online meeting, so not a face-to-face meeting, with our bank. Because for some reason, our bank, I won't name them because obviously, you know, legal reasons, they don't do face-to-face meetings around mortgages. Now, we've lived in our house for quite some time and it was due, our mortgage rate was due for renewal and it's usually like every couple of years. And it's been something I've been worrying about for about 6 months because if you live in the UK, you will know the interest rates have gone up and so is everything else, the cost of living and everything. So it's not great at the moment. So my then panic was, I'm not going to be able to afford the mortgage. bearing in mind, between us, we've got a relatively humble wage coming in. You know, we're not, you know, we're not doing badly, but we're not rich. We're never going to be rich. But so that meeting was arranged for the Friday morning. Now, all week, I worried about this. And it was worrying about making sure I joined the call, making sure I had access to join the call, making sure I had basically the mortgage advisor guy wanted to phone me a couple of days before to introduce himself and just sort of say, you know, is this the right kind of meeting you need? Because if any of you know, going on to your online banking, it's about as clear as mud. So for those days where I should have been, you know, enjoying my time off, you know, and getting stuff done and doing productive things, I just felt like, oh, I can't move past this worry until I've had this meeting. You know, I'm going to worry about it until it happens. And I don't really know why I was worried. So if any of you know, like, the wait mode scenario, so I don't know. So I don't know if it's an anxiety thing. I don't know if it's just a British thing. I don't know. Where, you know, when you're waiting around to, like, go somewhere or receive a call or go to an appointment, and you, for quite a length of time prior to that, you kind of just sit around and wait for it to happen. Now, Wednesday, he phoned, and I said, if you call me around about 2 p.m., I've got a few things to do in the morning. Phone me about 2 p.m. It gets to 1:30, and I'm sat upstairs with my phone in hand waiting for this call. I've dragged out paperwork and stuff because I need things. He might need numbers and account numbers and things. I don't know. When I actually spoke to him on the phone, it was, you know, he was a relatively normal person. and subsequently, the meeting went fine with no issue. So, and it was sorted. But I don't know what, I don't know. I just felt very worried about it. And there were, like, other things that week as well that I was just like, I can't move past that. I need to worry about it a little bit longer and then I'll move past it. And, you know, worrying just eats up so much time and it's a waste. You know, I remember somebody saying to me, well, there's no point worrying because unless you have something to worry about, because you're going to worry twice. And that is true. It's a waste of energy and it's a waste of emotion and you just end up wasting time. And I do this, like, things for, like, I knew I had had an email from my dentist to say, we can't honour that appointment that we initially provisionally booked for you. Can you please phone us to rearrange? I don't like phoning anyone. I don't mind when I'm in work. I'll phone anyone in work. I don't mind. You ask me to phone somebody when I'm off duty, I don't like it. I don't. And so I thought, right, I'll do that Monday morning. That'll be one of my, you know, on my to-do list. I'll do that. Be a 5-minute job. Rearrange me, you know, my appointment for when I'm off. Oh, no, it wasn't that. You know, I kept putting it off. So I kept moving it on my reminders list until the Friday. Oh, no, I tell a lie, it was the Thursday. So again, 4 days I procrastinated over that. I had to take my dog to the groomers for the first time. My husband usually does it. I hate taking her in the car because she cries. She gets very anxious. This is probably why she's my dog, because she's just me in dog form. And the dog groomers is about 2 miles away down the road. And again, I was like, what do I do? Do they take cash? Do I pay on card? What do I do? What's the method? What's the etiquette? What happens if I get there and they don't take cards? I'm going to have to go and get cash, but I can't get cash with the dog in the car. And I was, honestly, it was ridiculous. And I can laugh at myself about it now, but it was just like, I'm taking my dog to the groomers. It's not a great feat. It is not Everest. It's what normal people do. They take their dogs to a groomers. And I was just obsessing over it. And that went fine as well. As it always does. It works. It, you know, things work out. But it is. It's been like episodes like this that have kind of been and gone. And I try to ignore them. I try to sort of think rationally. But unfortunately, I'm not predispositioned to think rationally unless I'm in the workplace. So another example of this, which I may or may not have mentioned in my introduction. So we've hit a cold snap in the weather. Now, I hate cold weather. I hate it when it's icy and when it snows and when it's snowy and icy. I don't mind snow as much, particularly if I'm not working or having to get people places. Ice terrifies me. I'm really scared of falling on ice. I get really, really anxious. So we hit a cold snap in weather, particularly this morning. It was like -5, which for December in the UK is kind of uncharacteristically low. It usually gets colder in January. And this morning I was trying to, you know, I was going out with little G, got him in the car. Car started straight away, which I thought, great, you know, it's not been that cold. My handbrake got stuck, or parking brake, you know, for those of you who live across the pond. And I just couldn't think. I thought, oh no, there's something wrong with the car. Now, if I have anything wrong with a car or something happens with my car, my head goes west. I get really anxious because I know nothing about cars. I can fill up my, you know, screen wash. I can check my oil and fill it up with fuel. They're the kind of the three things I can do with my car. So when my parking brake, my handbrake, is pretty much, I'm releasing it and nothing's happening. So the actual brake is going down, but my wheels are staying high up. The brake is still staying on. And I thought, oh, I'll give it a couple of goes, you know. And I thought, oh no, I've got another fault with my car. Ah, you know, head blows up. That's it. Get back in the house. We're not going anywhere today. And I was supposed to go and see my friends today as well, which didn't happen. So I've been stuck in the house all day, which, you know, isn't good either. But, you know, we move. So then I've obsessed about it all day. Now, since then, Big G, my husband, has said, well, while I'm here, why don't you just go on the driveway, put your engine on? The ice has thawed quite a bit, or the frost. It's just been frosty. It's not been icy. It's been frosty. There is a difference. He said, well, now it's thawed a bit and it's a little bit warmer. Warmer being like, you know, +2. Just reverse on the drive and drive back up the drive and keep doing that for a couple of minutes, which I did. But then I'm sat there thinking, is this brake really off or am I driving this with a handbrake on? But I did feel a difference and I just had to try and talk myself around. It's fine. The car is cold, but it's functioning. It's okay. Calm down. I'm not very good at talking myself down when I'm on the ceiling, as they say, but I was better and I tried it for myself and it was fine. No alarms went off, nothing. It was fine. But then I'm worrying about tomorrow because I need to go out in the car tomorrow and I'm worried that the same thing is going to happen again. Now, I have researched it on the internet again, doing a bit of a search engine jobby, and it is let your car run for a few minutes before you move off because it allows whatever's frozen underneath the car to unfreeze, whether it's the cables or the handbrake itself. So, you know, rational. But it is anything to do with my car, I get really, really worried about. Because I think it's because it's something I don't know anything about, which I know is not very good for, you know, a modern woman, but unfortunately, I haven't got a mechanical brain. So any problems with my car give me huge anxiety. So yeah, I've had little episodes of these little kind of panicky, I'm really worrying about this. It's like a cluster worry. I don't know. I don't think they're like actual professional terms, but that's how I describe them. And it's just sort of like, I don't know if anybody out there has these sort of, you know, episodes themselves, or whether it's just maybe that it's my anxiety manifesting in short bursts rather than like prolonged like it normally does, whether it's kind of spouting out where this little weakness is, I don't know. But all I can say is I've not been enjoying that. And it has wasted time. Time that I could have used to be more productive, more motivated and things. And, you know, that week I had off, I didn't use that any time of that to work out or go on longer walks with the dog or, you know, exercise as much. So I think then that's had an impact as well. So it's all encompassing, really. And then just things like I then decided, being productive as I am, that I would take on a coach. Now, the coach I normally go for, he ticks all the boxes in terms of what I need from a coach health-wise. So I have put quite a little bit of weight back on. I lost quite a lot of weight in the first lockdown, but I wasn't happy with it. The results I got were pretty astonishing. But it was incredibly restrictive. It was a very restricted diet plan and exercise plan. And I was like a prisoner to it. And the fear of letting my previous coach down kind of was my motivation rather than me wanting to motivate myself. So it was like really not healthy for me. So this guy, who happens to be a friend of my husband's, and he's also a friend of a friend, I sort of had a bit of a consultation with him a few months back, and unfortunately I can't afford him. His particular set of skills are beyond my financial means currently. So, but obviously he would be my first port of call if I was, you know, a little bit better off money wise. Anyway, he's put a Black Friday offer on where it's like a drop a dress size for Christmas. So I thought, you know what? I could be sat here eating snacks and just generally feeling sorry for myself and wondering why I'm putting weight on when, quite frankly, I know where I'm putting weight on because I'm eating more and exercising less. So it's very much an accountability kind of program for the next couple of weeks. So I've been on that since last Monday just gone. So again, it's the same kind of similar sort of process in terms of progress photos, your metrics, sort of set workouts and things like that. However, apart from a calorie deficit target, I am not restricted on what I have to eat. So nutrition-wise, I'm not restricted because as long as I stay within my calorie baseline, which my coach has set up for me, I could eat what I wanted. What he is saying, though, is to make more sensible decisions. So, yeah, you could eat that, but you could eat something just as nice that's more healthy. And that's kind of his ethos. And he's not too bothered about hammering the exercises where on my previous coaching program, it was quite restrictive in terms of you can only eat certain things on certain days. You have to weigh everything. You have to, follow basically everything I say. You have to exercise and get your steps in, you know, every day. And the fear of letting them down was a very poor motivator you know, in hindsight, but that was the main course of my motivation. Whereas with him, he's very much more like, well, you're responsible, you're accountable. This is the guideline, you know, these are the guidelines I'm providing you. You don't have to hammer all these exercises. I would like you to get your steps in, and I would like you to eat more sensibly. And it's about changing the mindset and having a healthier relationship with food, which I know I don't, because I like all the wrong things. And I get a little bit lazy. When I come home from work, I don't want to be cooking something from scratch. I just want to grab something quick, which we're all guilty of. But I've got into that habit of doing that. Or if I've had a pretty bad day, I just want to eat snacks and just watch TV. So it is about changing that mindset, really, and just be more sensible. And, you know, and he said, don't worry too much about getting your exercises done, as long as you try and get your steps in. And particularly with my new job, yes, I know I said I wouldn't talk about my new job, but this is in context, that I am averaging on anything between 7,000 to 9,000 steps in my new job because of where I am and where I'm working. And, you know, I'm doing a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, where my other job is a little bit more sedentary. So that's helping. That's all steps towards, you know, pardoning the pun, but it is. And things like where I could be sat for 20 minutes just, you know, vegetating out, watching the TV. He's given me home exercises to do. So I haven't got like an excuse not to exercise. It's freezing cold outside. I've got a garage full of gym equipment. I'm not going to go in a garage when it's like -5 outside, because that's just not me. I don't like cold weather. So I'm going to wait till little G goes to bed, and I'm probably going to do just a little, you know, circuit. And it's all like body weight exercises, so I don't even need weights or anything. I can do that in the comfort of my living room. And I've done that a couple of times this week where, you know, little G's been sat watching the telly and I've just got my headphones on doing lunges on the other side of the living room, you know. So it's all steps towards a goal. And my goal is to maintain my health. You know, I'm only in my mid-30s. I want to stay as healthy as possible for as long as possible. And, you know, I need to have a healthier kind of outlook when it comes to nutrition and exercise. And, you know, and to be honest, this last week, although I've had my, you know, little acute kind of, you know, anxiety episodes, if you like, overall, I've slept better. I am having weird dreams, but I think that's more around about the book I'm reading. I think I'm just too immersed in it. So I am like having kind of weird, really vivid dreams, not livid dreams. I'm feeling more, you know, I'm able to concentrate better because I'm more hydrated. I'm eating better foods. I'm actually consciously thinking about what I'm going to have for my next meal rather than going, oh, I'll just, you know, just stick something in the air fryer. No, I'm actually consciously thinking, what's healthier than that though? What could I have instead? And just things like, okay, I haven't got my steps in today. I know that. I really could have. And it was more the weather putting me off. And I think the anxiety from like my handbrake being frozen on my cars kind of set me off, as in that I don't want to leave the house. I want to be in my safe space today. So I'm going to have to make up for that. Accountability wise, not because I feel duty bound to, that I'll do a little home circuit later. So it's just things like that. And I do feel better. I don't have this lack of motivation that I've been having since winter began. Yeah, okay, admittedly, I haven't been that motivated today, but I've been more productive in other ways. I've got more housework done. I've got, just things like that. I try to be a bit more kind of focused on something else. I've tidied up a little bit more, though looking at my house, it doesn't look that tidy, but never mind. And just things like, I want to do this. I want to get in good stead so I haven't got such a big mountain to climb in the new year when I have my summer holiday booked in June. So I want to be able to feel a bit more body confident rather than being not so body confident, which I am at the moment. So, you know, setting myself in good stead, you know, because, yeah, I also have Christmas to worry about, but I'm not just not going to kick the backside out of it. I'm just going to sort of enjoy it, but not overindulge. And I have my old team's Christmas party next week, so to look forward to. So I'm hoping to approach that, you know, looking a little bit healthier and maybe having a little bit of change in my body composition and my overall health, and, you know, maybe a couple of pounds lighter wouldn't be too bad either. So yes, so it is looking good, you know, things are looking positive. So I'm hoping these little acute worry episodes or these little panicky episodes that I've been having do sort of disappear, or I'm able to control them a little bit better and not obsess about them. Like, for example, I'm just hoping that my car behaves itself tomorrow, but I'm hoping, you know, like I said, just run the engine for a little bit, get everything thawing out. Hopefully the weather won't be as cold. I think we're coming out of this cold snap by the end of next week. So I can't control the weather, unfortunately. So I just need to kind of take a step back, take a deep breath, and just do what I can do with what I've got. So, yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. So I am overall feeling much better. You know, and I'm settling in my new job very well. Yes, I know I said I wouldn't talk about my new job, but again, context. So, yeah. So as always, you know, I am very much an emotional mental health advocate. So I always say, please keep talking. Just, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved. And just, you know, have that trusted person there that you can just go to, even if it's, you know, a friend or a neighbor, or even if it's somebody in a professional capacity. You know, there is always somebody out there willing to listen. So on that note, I am going to bid you farewell, and I'll keep you updated about other things. And yes, I will try not to talk about my new job too much. All right. Okay, then. So on that note, good night. Take care. Stay safe.